accession number 20118, reel 1.
Mr. Kelly, reel 1, where were you born, please?
York.
Which year was this?
1925 August.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at York?
Oh yeah, St. George's Roman Catholic School.
How old were you when you finished there?
14, 1939.
So this was just about the time of the outbreak of war?
Well, I actually was 14 on the 30th of August, and I went to school, but I left school on the holidays, the summer holidays, you see, which meant that I was too old to go back up for after 14.
So what happened to you during that summer?
Well, during the summer I went up to Scotland to my sister and my nephew to see him, and I stayed up there for about 3 months, and then I came back down to York and got a job with the Co-op Laundry, and I worked there for a while, and then I got a job with the Leeds Cleaning Company, aerodromes, painting the hangars, etc., you know.
At Leeds?
No, in Driffield, Linton and Topcliffe.
How had you felt when you heard the news that war had been declared on Germany?
Well, I didn't really think about it. You see, because, I don't know, there was something that we didn't seem to bother about. It was a matter of we were at home, the war was over there, and as far as that went, we didn't care. Well, we didn't care, really. We were only kids.
So you were doing this job painting aerodromes at first.
Mm.
What was that like?
Really good. I enjoyed it. It was a case of getting right up on top of the hangars, you know, and painting them. And exciting, being there with all the aircraft and what have you.
How long did this go on for?
Oh, about 8 months, I think. And then they wanted me to go with them to Thirsk, and I wouldn't go. So I then got a job I put on there with the Northern Motor Utilities. It was a whole firm, but it had a big branch in York. And I was a mechanic's mate, you know. And I think it was that really got me on Ordnance MT when I went into the army. And of course, that was it. I got called up at 18, 1943.
How did you feel about being called up?
It didn't really bother me. I'd been living away, you see, at Driffield with the painting these aerodromes. And of course, it didn't upset me at all going away. And I enjoyed it. I was only there about 3 weeks in Durham. I went to Hereford on a physical training and development course. And I was there for about six months altogether.
How had you got on at first with the army training?
Well, I enjoyed it. You see, because in York, the barracks were very far from where we lived. And the troops used to come from the barracks to the Catholic Church at the bottom of our street, and we watched them. And so we got interested in the actions, and of course they come easy to us when we were called up.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the training?
Well, from what I saw in Durham, they were all right. There was no badness about them like you see on television. They were human.
And what happened to you at Durham?
Oh, just training, military training, that was all, 3 weeks of it. And then, of course, as I say, they sent me to this place in Hereford where I got and all this PT, recreational training, and, you know, different sort of military activities.
Were you in a unit by now?
No, I didn't get into a unit until 1944, April the 1st, 1944.
How did that come about?
Well, because of the 6 months in Hereford and the 3 weeks in Durham, I was with the General Service Corps, and that was the unit that everybody went in when they were called up at 18. It was embodied with the Territorial Army, you know. It kind of to do 6 weeks at first and then get put into a unit. But sometimes they shipped them somewhere else, like they did in Hereford. Now, I went there to this place in Hereford because I was underweight. You see, I only weighed 108 pounds when I joined the army. And because they thought I was too active for that weight, they sent me to Hereford so I could be, you know, sort of developed physically.
How tall were you at that time?
About 5'6".
And which unit did you go into in April 44?
Royal Army Ordnance.
Had you put on weight by then?
Oh, yeah. It was only weight that was my problem. I mean, I was quite active otherwise. PT was nothing to me. It was just the weight.
Where did you join the RALC?
Derby.
And was there a particular unit that you joined there?
MT section.
What happened next?
Well, I went as a GD man, which was doing everything. And it was MT, which was tank parts, you know, tracks, bogey wheel assemblies, sprockets, and all different things that helped run the tank, you see. And they were all in a big depot, and they were all numbered, and they were all located in different places, you see. So I had to have a bit of a memory for where they were. And the job was that you either unloaded or loaded or selected good items for dispatch to different units. Well, that lasted me for about 2 years. But in between, and I went on an MT storm and clerk's course, which got me a few more bob, you know. And then I moved from there to Preston. And I was only at Preston a couple of months. I got a job in the kitchen there, in cookhouse, you know. And then I got to me leave, embarkation leave, and went to Donington, Shropshire. From Donington, we went over the channel to Calais. And then from Calais, we went by train to Toulon. And the route was known as the Medlock. And of course, we got to port side. And I was really pleased because it was something that I'd always wanted to do, you know, go abroad. And then we went to Tel El Kebir. Well, I'd never heard of such a place. But apparently there'd been a big battle there in the 1800s. But there was a little river at the side of it called the Sweetwater Canal. Oh, and it was supposed to be the most horrid, dirtiest river in the world. Because they said that if you fell in it, you needed about 25 to 30 inoculations against every type of disease there was. But
Was the war still going on by then?
Oh no, the war had finished. The war had finished in 1945. And I went to Preston in 1945, the back end of 1945. And I was only there about three months. And I went over there to the Middle East about December 1945.
And you were with the MT section of the RAOC there, were you?
Not in the Middle East, no. Because I don't know what happened, but when we got there, we had to go to a transit camp. Now, the transit camp was just a three-week period until they allocated us to whatever job we were going to do. But anyway, it came to pass that I got a job on a RSD, return stores depot, known as 5RSD. And everything that was on it was rubbish, you know, junk, old army beds, hospital-type beds, tins, bed bottom tins, you know, chairs, tables, actual rubbish, junk. It was getting built up for scrap. Well, I changed one of the hospital beds for mine, you see, because the beds we had were no good. And some of the lads wanted them, and so I had to get them beds as well. Yeah. And I got caught doing it. But the RSM asked me what it was, and I told him, and he said, well, give everybody in the camp these sort of beds. And so I had the job of doing that. Now, it went on and on like that until this particular night in the Nafi, when the lights went out, and a voice came out over the tannoy speakers in the Nafi, we're on strike. Well, of course, everybody started laughing about it. And they were shouting, get the so-and-so lights on, and didn't really see. But this voice carrying on and says that we're going on strike because of the government's idea of slowing down the demobilisation or even cancelling it. So this voice went on, keep away from work. Don't do any work at all, but for now, meet on the football ground and we'll give you more details. So, of course, that was when it actually started. We all paraded, all joined each other on the ground, and there was a lot of shouting going on, what this, that and the other, and who was with us, and what other units were, you know, going to join in the strike. But I got fed up. It was getting cold, you see. We'd already been told to take our overcoats with us. So it was a matter of, let's go, you know, back, because the Nafi was shut. There was nowhere to go. So I'm going back to bed. Now, the following morning, there was such a racket, and the hut doors were forced open, and there was a voice shouting, come on outside, you lot. Well, we got out, and we didn't know what was going on, but they paraded us and marched us onto this little square, barrack ground sort of thing, and an RSM read what was supposed to be the riot act. And all this was, you've done this and you've done that and you're liable for all these different kind of punishments. So after that, we marched off because we were having to go back to where we worked. And as we got onto the main road, all along the side of the road, there were a column of armed vehicles with servicemen, infantrymen, with weapons pointing towards us as we marched past. Now, it was a bit of fun, really, to us, because it was something that you couldn't envisage, you couldn't think about it. But we went by and we whistling and singing, and there was a lot of lads at the back shouting curses and, oh, wait till I get older, young mate, and this and the other. So these troops, these infantrymen, well, I don't think they knew what it was all about. Eventually, we got past them and got to the depot where we were working, our workplace. And then someone said, What about the Nafi break? Well, we didn't have a van, a vehicle, to take the two lads to the Nafi that usually got the tea and the cakes, whatever. So someone decided, let's go to the Polish Nafi, which was somewhere across the desert. Well, somebody said, well, where is this Nafi? Oh, it's only over there. So about 14 of us got in a little parade and marched out onto the desert, you see. Well, we weren't there long, about 5 minutes, and there was a column of these troops that we'd already passed coming towards us. And then when they got towards us, the officer jumped out of his leading truck and was, where are you lot going? Who told you to go? Nobody. We haven't had any breakfast. We haven't got any naffy, so we go into the Polish soldiers' naffy for a drink, you see. We've had no water because that's all off, sour. There were no Germans out. There were no natives in the works. It was just at a standstill. So he said, right, all your names. And we had to give him our name and number. And he said, right, they escorted us back to the centre, you know, the where we were working. And we just sat there and hung about, hoping that something would happen. And then, lo and behold, a truck come in with tea and sandwiches and buns on it, and it was all for us, see. Now, there was some yes men, you know, the old, oh yes sir, no sir, this, blah, blah, and they didn't want anything to do with the our going over to this Nafi or even the strike. And they got in the queue for this stuff, but one of my mates grabbed him and he said, out you, if there's anything left you can have it. You know, we got this, not you. Well, they didn't get anything really because we scuffed a lot, drunk all the tea because they left us the urn with the tea in, you see. And it was later on someone said they knew that that stuff was coming, you know, and they didn't tell us. And that was the idea, that they were in the queue first, so they'd get their rations before we got to know about it. Well, I said they were unlucky, weren't they? And of course, the job was, well, it were over, was the strike, because it were nothing really. It was just a matter of some wild crackpot deciding all of a sudden that they'd have a bit of a show. Now, I don't know how they got to know about this supposed demob stoppage, because I only saw it on telly last year about this do in India. Do you remember? Where the RAF went on strike. And that happened at the same time, the same period as this, ours, you see. Well, theirs was recorded, but ours wasn't, so somebody must have got the griff from over there that they'd gone on strike, so well, why don't we? But they were doing a different job to us. They were made to do these civilian aircraft jobs and, you know, the passenger planes. But we weren't, we were just there taking care of a load of nothing, because most of the stuff that was out there was obsolete. It was all made for the Middle East. Now, if it had to go anywhere else, it would have been, have to be rebuilt, you see. And as far as we were concerned, there was nothing in there that was worth going on strike for. Because, to be honest about it, I enjoyed my time out there because I was doing nothing. I was getting lazy. I did get into bother, I know, but it was because me, the life I was living out there was upset by something. I was either sent to another camp or I was put on a different job, what I didn't want to do. Now, I was, as I say, an MT Storeman, yet I was doing a job which was actually general duties on this compound with all this other stuff on it. But we had some good things out of it, because I can recall a truck coming with about 16 cases of Scotch whisky. You see, we had a railway line that run into this section where we were working, and they pushed the trucks in, they had the natives, and we unloaded them and they were sent out again. Now, there was everything. Sometimes we got stuff that wasn't for us, you know, like, and there was this particular truck come in and it stunk. Oof. And somebody said, "By God, what is it?" Anyway, one of the German prisoners of war that we had working with us, he got in the truck and he says, "Oh, come on." And one of the lads got in and he says, "God, look at this lot." And of course we looked in and there were about 16 cases of Scotch whisky, and I think there were about 8 bottles in each. Well, there were no paperwork with it. So my mate says, what are we going to do with it? I said, "Well, what can we do with it?" I said, "Before they get to know it, we'll have our share." And we took about 6, I think, 6 cases out. Well, the ones that were left in were okay, except one case which was broke and 2 of the bottles were smashed. And that was causing the smell, you see. So the Germans had put it all into this little compound thing they'd made. And this fella said, "We better tell them." So he went to the office and he says, "Sergeant, come and have a look at this." And when the sergeant came and saw it, he said, "Lock it up and get it pushed down the track." Which we did, you see. And then all of a sudden, maybe about 20 minutes afterwards, there was 3 trucks came in. You know, jeeps and 1,500 weights. And about 4 officers, high-ranking officers. Well, they went into the office and they came out with this sergeant and his mate. And got the Germans to load all that whiskey and stuff that was in that truck onto their jeep. And it was away. It only went to the officers and sergeant's mess. And no questions asked, you know, just, "Oh, we'll have that." But of course we got our lot out of it as well.
Did you drink it or sell it? Or?
Oh, no, we couldn't sell it because we were in a garrison. It was surrounded by barbed wire and land mines and everything. And we couldn't get out unless we got a pass. And it was no good going out, because there was nowhere to go. The nearest place was Ismailia, which was on the Suez Canal. And I went there for a week's holiday once. And then there was Cairo, which we could go to. But that was it. There was nowhere else. I mean, and each one was about 16 miles away, and Cairo, I think, was about another 22 miles away, all in opposite direction. And we were banging in the middle of the desert, with just the Suez Canal at the side of us, and the Sweetwater Canal and the Nile going to Cairo. So we eventually drunk it, and the Germans drunk it. Well, we'd given it, but they weren't prisoners of war. This was 1946 and 1947, and they were still there in, you know, in the German prison uniforms. So they would make snaps out of potato peeling, and they would give us it. Good, you know, just as good. So we had to be good to them. They weren't forced to work, if you could follow my meaning. It was a matter of, they were just doing it, and they were doing things that you would never have thought of them doing. You know, like making slippers, painting, sketching. They were making cigarette cases out of old mess tins. It was really, it was good. But then After the strike, we went to Kantara, I think it was, yeah, for a military training, refresher course sort of thing. And from there I went to a camp, and all I did was guards. And one day, it was about Christmas, we were getting on for Christmas anyway, and this lad says to me, "Hey, you're on list for LEAP." LEAP was Leave in Advance of Python, and Python was a code name for personnel that had been in the Far East for 5 years or more. And I said, "Get lost, you know." "It's right." He said, "I'm on it and all." So I thought, well, I'll have a look. And surely enough, my name was on there for this LEAP. Anyway, Christmas Eve, I was on what they called telephone operator duty in the company office, but it'd be Christmas holidays. And I had my breakfast, and I was due to get my dinner. A fella come relieve me, but nobody came, and I rung up roundabout. I eventually got onto the cookhouse, and I told him, and he says, "Right, I'll get you somebody down." But by the time he got me down, and I got to the cookhouse, there was nothing left. All the dinner, the Christmas dinner and the festivities had all gone, you see. So I had to finish up with a bacon and eggs or something for Christmas. And I got no drink or anything at all. But he didn't worry me because it wasn't Christmas. I mean, the sun was blazing. And it was more like summer, the middle of summer. But I went home on leave, and it was supposed to, I went home in January 1947, I'm sorry. And I thought to myself, when I'm going, why am I going on LEAP now when I'm due pretty mob in another couple of months' time? Because I'd added it all up. And with me, the mob number being 57, I reckon it up that if the demob stays as it was, which it eventually did, I should be out by October 1947. But here I am going home in 1947, in January. When I got home, and it was so different, it was cold. All my mates were working, and I was on my own sort of thing. So I give it up, and I went back, you know, to the transit, and he said, "You are all going back home because the ship is back. Is it in Southampton?" Now, we should have got it from Liverpool. Anyway, I went back home for another 3 weeks, so that was 7 weeks leave I'd had. And then I went to Southampton, and we got a ship called the Georgic, and we went through the Straits and into the Med. In passport side into the canal, and the ship got stuck in the canal, in the sand, you know, the damp sand, and we only had to go a bit further up the canal to get these landing barges to take us across to the other side.